Welcome to session number 4 of the Emotional Eating Breakthrough Program. I'm Mark David, founder of the Institute for the Psychology of Eating. The title of today's session is Reframing Emotional Eating. So I trust that you're getting value from this program, that you're putting in the time to do the practices and the journaling exercises, and that you're beginning to see that there's a light at the end of the tunnel for you. So for this week, let's deepen even more into your journey to heal and transform emotional eating. And we'll be doing that by redefining or reframing how we see this thing called emotional eating. Here's what I mean. Most of us think that emotional eating is my problem. It's an issue. It means something's wrong with me. I must be broken. So if I can fix this broken part of me called emotional eating, then all will be well. If I can fix this defective aspect of my brain, then life is going to get really good. And of course, if emotional eating means there's something broken about me, then clearly what's broken, it must be my willpower or my ability to control myself, or maybe it's part of my brain that makes me self-sabotage. So with this approach, we effectively spend our time and energy fighting our emotional eating. We attack our problem, which generally means we attack our own self. We think we're worthy of our own self-attack and self-contempt because we have a food problem. And we imagine that if only I can solve my food problem, then the problem goes away. But the problem is, if you could have solved this food problem, you would have done so a long time ago. So clearly, hopefully, you're seeing that attacking emotional eating, attacking it as the enemy, as a character fault, as a personal deficiency, as a broken part of you, does not work. Give it up. Here's a different point of view. Emotional eating does not mean that there's something wrong with you. Emotional eating does not mean that you're broken. Emotional eating does not mean you have lack of willpower or control. I mean this. Emotional eating does not mean anything bad about you. Zero bad. So what does emotional eating mean then? Well, here's the reframe. Here's the new definition that will change everything for you. Emotional eating is a great teacher. In fact, everything that happens in your relationship with food and body is a great teacher. Emotional eating is a great teacher. Let me elaborate. Emotional eating is not here to torture you. It's not here to make you miserable. It's not here to ruin your life. Again, emotional eating, it's a great teacher. It's here to help you learn and grow. Every good teacher you have ever had was here to help you learn and grow. So this is all about you looking at a bigger view of life, of the world, of why you are here in this world. Your life has meaning. It has a purpose. No matter what your religious beliefs are or aren't, I think we can all agree that we all came here, at the very least, to learn and grow and have experiences. That's exactly what you've been doing. Tell me if it's different. You've been learning and growing and having experiences since the moment you were born. Observe every human being you know or see. They all have experiences that are here to help them learn and grow. When we choose to not learn and grow, we suffer, right? We repeat mistakes. We stay stuck. We don't get very far. If you didn't want to learn and grow as a child, you would have never learned to read or write. You would have never learned to tie your shoes. You would have never learned to speak, to dress, to drive a car, etc. So life itself is the greatest teacher. Your life is your greatest teacher. And your relationship with food is a great teacher. And specifically, emotional eating is a great teacher. So when we learn the lessons that we're being taught, we can then go on to graduate. It's a very beautiful and elegant system. You learn what you're supposed to learn in school, and you master it to some degree, and you graduate. So our relationship with food and body is truly a great teacher. you don't fight a great teacher, right? You don't attack a great teacher. You listen. You learn. You get curious. You ask questions. You spend time. You linger. You dive deep. You notice. You be patient. You stay humble as you're learning something that's difficult. And you commit to learning whatever it is that a greater wisdom is trying to impart to you. So if you are challenged with emotional eating, I promise you, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you and you are not broken. You gotta let it go. And don't just let it go forever. The good news is, this is very good news. Emotional eating is no longer your enemy. You don't have to fight it anymore, which means you don't have to fight yourself anymore. The battle's over. You have just reframed emotional eating into what it really is. It's a teacher for you. And as you learn its specific, unique lessons that are just for you, you can begin the process of graduating from it and moving forward in your life. You've been doing this for your whole life. Life has been teaching you, you've been learning it, and you've been moving on. Now, emotional eating has certain commonalities for all people who emotionally eat, and yet it's teaching each one of us very differently. Your journey, your specific journey, is beautifully unique. So I really hope you're seeing how this reframing of emotional eating just changes everything. You don't need to self-reject anymore. You don't need to fight yourself anymore. You don't need to judge yourself because you emotionally eat. Would you judge a tiny infant if they didn't yet know how to crawl or walk? Of course not. They're here to learn. They're learning. You're learning. This is about seeing your life through fresh eyes. This is all about you getting unstuck by seeing things clearly and accurately. The only time we get stuck is when we're not learning. We're not being curious and therefore we're not learning. So you are now embarking on a whole new journey with emotional eating. I mean that. It's the kind of journey where you settle in, just settle in, into becoming a student of your own life, an explorer. Life is bigger than you. It's bigger than us. Life has a grander wisdom that it operates by. There's a higher power, a greater intelligence that moves us. And this greater wisdom teaches us through our unwanted habits and behaviors, through our challenges. It teaches us in specific through our challenges with food and body. People learn their challenges in different ways. Some people learn their challenges through addiction, through finances, through relationships, through various hardships, through death and dying. So you might be learning your lessons through many of those, all of those, a lot of those. But some of these are front and center for us. And for many of us, our relationship with food and body is front and center. It's one of our greatest teachers. Emotional eating is a great teacher for you. You know, I worked with a woman once. I'll call her Maria. She was 54. She came to see me for emotional eating. Maria owned a beauty salon. She'd been divorced for about 10 years. She had two grown daughters and her family, close family, lived nearby. Maria was constantly worrying about food, thinking about it, confused as to why her emotional eating, it would always get the better of her. And she simply felt stuck and trapped. When I met her, she just felt very defeated. She had worked really hard at dieting. She wasn't lazy. So I want to work really hard at dieting for over 40 years, and she now has concluded that food has all the power, and it just controls her life. Maria believed that there was something in her that was fundamentally flawed. She thought she was broken because of emotional eating, and she didn't know what to do to fix things. She kept trying the same thing, which was dieting and controlling her appetite. Maria also shared she was the type of person who didn't like conflict. She was raised to be seen and not heard, expressing anger or different points of view that others might not like. That was something she believed was forbidden. She also shared with me that she has secretly been embarrassed about her body since a very young age. She didn't like her shape. She strongly felt that her lower body was way too big compared to her upper body, and that no amount of dieting and exercise was ever able to change that. So she described herself as a naturally big-bodied woman, and yet she has spent her lifetime dieting nonetheless. So here's what I learned about Maria as we worked together. Maria did not approve of herself really at the most fundamental level. She believed that the shape of her body made her unlovable. She believed that she needed to look different in order to be loved. She was focused on food, dieting, and trying every different weight loss approach out there, and she actually couldn't remember a time when she wasn't dieting. And paradoxically, Maria also expresses that she loves food. She loves to cook for people. She loves to buy food, prepare it. She loves to eat it. She often can't stop eating once she starts. She finds certain sweet desserts to be irresistible. She especially emotionally eats in the evening time. She would like to be in a relationship again, but doesn't believe she can because of her body and her weight. So along with spending time with her daughters and her family, food is the place where Maria finds comfort. And yet she can't control her appetite. So it's just all confusing for her. And in this confusion, she's gone 40 years in confusion. So I decided to focus with Maria on how emotional eating was a great teacher. That just began there. And at first, this concept definitely didn't make sense to her. She felt that emotional eating was her enemy, that food, even though she loved it, was somehow her enemy. So how in the universe could it be a great teacher? Now, I first explained to her, hey, whatever you've been trying to do in the past to control your eating, to control your appetite, to deal with your weight or your shape, it's not working. It hasn't worked. It hasn't worked for 40 years. So whatever we do, it's got to be new. It's got to be different. I noticed that Maria was a deeply religious woman, so I appealed to her spiritual nature. I suggested that emotional eating is one way that we're being asked to learn deeper lessons in life that might not have anything to do with food itself. This was curious for her. I posed the question, what could emotional eating possibly be teaching you? And at first it was a hard question for her to explore, but we worked together. And here's where she arrived with some coaching. Maria felt that her body was somehow a curse. It was here to torture her. She had a terrible body because she was undeserving of anything better. I offered to her that her emotional eating was in large part being driven by her simple resentment of her body. Her constant dieting would have her in deprivation. And then she would swing in the other direction and emotionally eat because she was so hungry and so in need of comfort from attacking herself and attacking her body and starving it. In fact, we talked about how lack of food stimulates the starvation response and increases our appetite and physiologically drives us to eat more. I suggested that emotional eating was teaching her to stop trying to change her body, at least for a time. Give yourself a rest. Learn to live with this body you have right now. Let go of changing it and dieting it and trying to just enjoy it while you're still alive. Speak as kindly to your own body as you would speak to any of your children or loved ones. Forgive your body. And ask your body to forgive you for how you've been just kind of treating it not so well. Practice gratitude for it. You've been practicing trying to change it, trying to alter it, trying to make it different because you don't like it. Let's start to see how it's been good to you. Next I asked Maria if she found herself turning to food whenever there was conflict with people in her family. I just had an intuition. And she laughed and said yes. We explored together how she was taught from a young age that be seen and not heard. And for a long time, she was using food to stuff down her words and her feelings and her voice. And I suggested that now emotional eating is teaching you the opposite of that. It's teaching you to find your voice. It's pointing somewhere else. Find your voice. Speak up. Be honest. Assert boundaries with certain family members. Speak the truth to certain family members. Have difficult conversations. It's okay. I also suggested, and this is in the course of time that we are working together, that emotional eating was asking her to find love and relationship and intimacy now. Stop waiting. She was using food to soothe her loneliness and give her something to be close and intimate with. You know, food is a very intimate experience. You're eating it, you're tasting it, you're taking it into your body. You're feeling so good by it. You're getting pleasure from it. You're just loving on it, and it feels like it's loving you back. Food is intimate, and we often use food as a substitute for intimacy. And what was fascinating to me was she acknowledged that she actually had some men in her life who were interested in her, but somehow she found a way to still dismiss that because she believed no one could love her because of her body. No, she wasn't loving her because of her body. Other people, give them a chance. When I asked her if she knew anyone in her life who had her same body type and who had love in their life, she quickly smiled and acknowledged that, yes, she did. And it's interesting because her face lit up with a certain recognition in that moment that maybe love was possible for her. She was starting to see how she was creating her own food prison, and she had the keys to get out. So instead of working on fixing a food problem, we looked at what it might be teaching her that technically had nothing to do with food. Maria slowly began to realize that her relationship with food was indeed here to teach her. And I watched this help her relax more. She felt relieved that she could let go of dieting for a while. You know, she was sick of it anyway, and it just needed some encouragement. She was finding a new peace with food. She was enjoying food without feeling guilty about it. And in our overall work together, a handful of months, I watched Maria grow as a woman. She became more confident in herself, more outspoken. She was more glowing because she wasn't fighting against her own body. She lost about 15 pounds in a handful of months without trying, but most importantly, she said she felt lighter than ever. She had other weight losses in her life, but she truly felt light this time. Honestly, I think that's because she was no longer fighting food, fighting herself, fighting emotional eating, and she was being her true self. More and more, she was learning from emotional eating, and in that process, it no longer ruled her life. She found a new freedom with food, a new freedom with herself. So, the question for you is, how is emotional eating a great teacher for you? How's it here to help you learn and grow? What is emotional eating asking of you? What's it trying to show you? My friends, these are questions worth asking. These are the kinds of questions that can lead to powerful answers and insights. Now, compare those questions. How is emotional eating a great teacher for me? How's it help me here to learn and grow? Compare those questions to questions like, what's wrong with me? What's my problem? How do I fix myself? Why am I so broken? Why am I a willpower weakling? Why can't I control myself? I'm emphasizing the negative in those, but they're negative. They don't create space. They don't create inspiration. They don't allow us to grow. Those questions are actually judgments. They're assessments. They're negative diagnoses that push us down. Can you see how asking those questions keeps us small? They ensure that we stay stuck because the question only has a limited answer and not a positive one. So let me just repeat the powerful questions to ask yourself one more time. Powerful questions invite powerful answers that lead to powerful solutions and powerful change. How is emotional eating a great teacher for me? How is emotional eating here to help me learn and grow? What's emotional eating asking of me? What's it trying to show me? Different ways to ask the same thing. Now, here's what we're going to do. As a way to get the juices flowing for you, I want to go through some potential answers to these questions. So I'm going to just give some general answers that I have found that a lot of people notice in their life. Wow, oh wow, emotional eating is asking me to learn these specific lessons. Now, as I discuss some of these possibilities here, I want you to see if any of these ring true for you personally. And there are plenty of others, but here's a list to get you going. So for so many people, first, emotional eating is trying to teach us patience. Patience. And by patience, I mean the virtue of understanding that things take time. What happens for so many of us is that we live in a state of stress, of anxiety, of fear, because I'm emotionally eating. And we believe we need to get rid of the problem of emotional eating yesterday. Now, whenever we're in a rush, whenever we see our challenge as the enemy, and you're moving really fast because this challenge has to be fixed yesterday, you go into the physiologic stress response. Remember that? Heart rate up, blood pressure up, increased output of stress hormones such as cortisol, adrenaline, insulin, digestive shutdown. Time speeds up in a stress response. That's because in a true survival moment, when something is actually trying to kill you and eat you, time is running out. So the main stress hormone, cortisol, actually speeds up time perception. You might not have known that. Little known scientific fact. So right now, if you're all relaxed, and we can give you an injection of cortisol into your bloodstream, you're going to change within an instant. And you're going to start to think like, oh my God, like I need to do stuff. Like time is running out. I need to do this. I need to do that. Cortisol speeds up time perception as a good thing. Because in a true stress response, when the lion is chasing you, time is running out. So you want to make quick decisions. But when I'm stressed every day, I feel like time is running out. I have to get rid of this emotional eating now. I got to get rid of this weight now. I got to fix all my problems now. So a stressed brain naturally functions as if time is running out. And when we lack patience, we're in a constant state of stress. So in a sense, we are internally running from a lion. We think our survival is at stake if we don't get rid of emotional eating yesterday. And we get caught in an endless loop of agitation. So patience cures that. Patience is a higher human quality. It's a virtue that you invoke, you call forth. It's a state of being that you call into being. You call it into your life. So no matter how long you've been dealing with emotional eating, I just invite you right now to push the refresh button on how you're going about healing and transforming emotional eating. So begin your healing journey now. Let go of a time frame. Just drop it. See if you just drop it. For a moment even. Let go of a time frame for when emotional eating needs to be gone. Stop forcing your will upon a greater wisdom and power. Let emotional eating be the great teacher that it is. Emotional eating needs your patience to reveal its secrets and its teachings that it has for you. Yet another way of saying that is emotional eating is asking you to relax into healing it rather than stressing yourself into healing it. Invoke patience with emotional eating and your life is going to change for the better. You're also going to notice other places in life where you can benefit from being more patient, I'm sure. My friends, the way we do food is often very similar to the way we do life. If you're being impatient with food, if you're being impatient with weight, with emotional eating, we're likely being impatient, I don't know, with loved ones, with work, with our hopes, with our desires, or simply rushing through our day without truly living our life. Closely related to patience, here's another lesson that emotional eating is often teaching us. We've talked about this a little bit. Emotional eating is asking us to slow down. Really. Slowing down means you move at a natural pace when you can. We don't force things. We allow the wisdom of life to move us at the speed it chooses. I think that we've become so conditioned to move fast in this world, fast food, fast videos, and want everything to happen at lightning speed, just like in the movies. Everything is cut and spliced and everything happens fast. It doesn't work like that. You know, the problem is we're moving too fast, and when we move fast, we don't notice. When we move fast, we don't see things. When we move fast, we don't hear messages. We don't see clues. And we can easily miss out on life. Slowing down means slowing down with food. We've talked about this. We eat so fast oftentimes. And as we've seen, when we eat fast, the brain does not register taste, pleasure, aroma, satisfaction, all of that. And the net result is that the neural pathways that regulate our appetite are confused and the body believes it hasn't eaten. So any meal eaten too quickly, even if it's a big meal, often has the brain screaming hungry because we didn't meet the requirements for appetite reduction, your experience of the meal. That's why the practice from our last session around slow, relaxed, sensuous eating is so key. Yeah, it's hard. I get it. It's hard because the world is moving fast. And it's easy to get caught up in a pace that's not natural to us, that has us in a kind of chaos that somehow seems normal. So slowing down with food, slowing down with life go hand in hand, and you do the best you can to reclaim some of your natural rhythm. In the comfort of your own home, you can slow down. In your office, you can slow down with your meal. Even if you can take 5 minutes, 10 minutes in your day for yourself to breathe, to be present, you're slowing down with yourself. You're giving your brain the signal that it's safe. You can relax. You don't have to be in a stress response. It's okay. And the more we relax, the less we need to emotionally eat. Fast living goes hand in hand with emotional eating. Slowing down your life, going at the pace of what's more natural to us, helps us heal and transform emotional eating. For many of us, emotional eating is trying to teach us awareness. Awareness means we're here, we're present, we're awake. So rather than checked out, the state of awareness has us checking in. We've talked about this. Many people who emotionally eat can disappear into emotional eating. We abandon our body, we abandon our moment, and we allow the habit, the unconscious, automatic, repetitive habit of emotional eating to just do itself. We allow it to have its way with us. So a part of us must become aware in order to heal emotional eating. That's because when we emotionally eat, a part of us must become unaware. Part of us has to go to sleep. Awareness cures. When we invoke awareness, we are doing our part to heal ourselves, transform, to help ourselves transform emotional eating. You know, remember back in session number 2, we did the exercise called the What Else Inventory. You created a list of everything other than eating that helps you relax yourself, that helps you feel nourished and self-soothed. If something helps you feel nourished, if something helps you feel pleasured, then it helps you relax. And it helps you get present. And your practice has been to do your best to use these strategies from that list as a substitute for turning to food to regulate your emotions. Well, that practice, it requires awareness. It's centered around awareness because it's asking you to not do your automatic unconscious habit of emotional eating when you're trying to deal with uncomfortable emotions. The practice of what else is asking you to stay awake. It's asking you to stay in awareness, to ask a question that you can only ask when you're awake. You can't ask the question of, well, what else can I do when you're asleep? That's how a new habit is born. A new positive habit is born. So awareness is something you invoke. You bring it in. You call it forth. You invite it. Awareness dispels darkness. It's the quality within you that is going to help you heal any unwanted and unconscious habit. Okay, next. For many of us, emotional eating is teaching us. It's a great teacher. Here's what a great teacher has to say. The great teacher of emotional eating has to say, and it's around self-attack. And it's about letting go of self-attack. Because you tried self-attack, chances are, and it doesn't work. Emotional eating is asking us to stop attacking our own body and our words and our thoughts and our deeds. Self-attack is a dead-end strategy, doesn't work. It's a viral belief, meaning we're taught by the world that if we self-attack and self-judge and self-hate, that this will somehow make us a better human being. Try that on a child and see if it works for them. In fact, don't try it. But intuitively, you get, doesn't work. You've never met a single person who has stood on the soapbox and proclaimed that they hated on themselves for months, years, or decades, and one day they woke up all happy and healthy with the ideal diet and the ideal body and no more emotional eating. Doesn't happen. So it's your job, it's your responsibility to call a ceasefire. It's your task to end the war on self. If you want to have a world absent of war, don't complain about war out there in the world, unless you call a peace, a ceasefire with you. Start with yourself, at the very least. War begins in the mind. Any war begins in somebody's head. Hey, this sounds like a good idea. Not a good idea. Let's come up with a better idea. You come up with a better idea for you, particularly in the ways you self-attack. Vigorously monitor your inner conversation. Listen to how you speak to yourself. Do this every moment of every day. That requires awareness. When you hear the old viral habit of self-attacking words begin to announce itself, you cut it off. You say to yourself, if I wouldn't say this to my own child, my own loved one, my own best friend, I ought not say it to myself. So you are learning to harness your internal conversation. It's like that negative internal conversation. Think of it as a bad dog. And that's running around and you're just putting a leash on it. And saying, whoa. Mm-mm. Stated in the positive, emotional eating is often teaching us to embrace the practice of self-acceptance. So much of emotional eating is asking us to embrace self-acceptance. Meaning, accept where you're at right now. Just use that as a starting place. If you want to get to a place where you feel you can accept yourself, then you need to practice acceptance. Start doing it now. You don't have to like emotional eating, but you can love the person, you, who has emotional eating. You can be kind to the person, you, who has emotional eating. Yeah, you could be pissed off about it. You could be annoyed at it. You could want to kick it. Okay, fine. But let's self-accept. Let's still accept you, even though this unwanted behavior is happening. Remember, emotional eating is a behavior. It doesn't define you. It's a thing that you do. It's not what you are. You are not an emotional eater. You are a person who does this behavior called emotional eating. You can have an earache and still love yourself. You can have arthritis and still choose to love yourself. You can have the unwanted habit called emotional eating and still choose to love, accept, and be kind to yourself. If you beat yourself up because you have an earache, like, what's that going to do? This is called maturing. Really, it's called growing. That's what a great teacher helps us do. A great teacher helps us learn and grow and mature. This is about becoming a smarter and more enlightened human being. Allow me to say this. We can never truly heal and transform emotional eating if we continue to wallow in self-attack and self-judgment. Emotional eating is always asking you to call off the dogs and manage your unwanted habit with self-acceptance, with kindness. Okay to not like the behavior, but you can still love the person having the behavior. It's a simple shift. It's a reframe. Very useful. One of the biggest lessons emotional eating is teaching so many of us, here's another one, is to learn to track ourselves emotionally. Meaning we're being asked to stay awake to our emotional experience as it changes moment to moment, hour to hour, day to day, etc. Now, in an ideal world, our parents would have done an amazing job of tracking our emotions when we were young. They would have been able to see when you were down, when you were needy, you were depressed, you were lonely, you were upset, when you're needing love. And they would have helped you move through those difficult emotions with wonderful parental support and insight. Unfortunately, not all of us have had the pleasure of this kind of upbringing. No blame on anybody. Your parents, our parents, they did the best they could. And oftentimes they didn't get us, they didn't understand us, they didn't truly see us. They likely didn't have the skills to notice the difficulties we are going through and give us the love and care that we needed. They could not track, the adults in your world couldn't track your emotional experience. Maybe you had nobody that was doing that with any skill whatsoever. That's challenging for a young person. So I say that because the unwanted habit of emotional eating often begins at a young age, when we were doing our best to self-regulate our difficult-to-process feelings. We weren't getting the guidance we needed, so we did the best we could do with what we knew. Every child knows that food helps them feel good. Feel bad, eat food, feel better. So your job is to be a better parent to yourself today than your parents were when you were growing up. That's the lesson of learning to track your emotional experience. Tracking your emotional experience means basically watching yourself, observing yourself, witnessing yourself, being a good parent to yourself, and helping yourself manage those difficult to manage emotional experiences. So again, your job is to be a better parent to yourself today than your parents were when you were growing up. So you don't have to blame your parents anymore. It's not their problem anymore. Now it's your responsibility. So it's about learning to adult yourself, being a good parent to you. Noticing, what am I feeling? Being present to yourself. And not doing what your parents might have done, which is not pay full attention to you. So if I let my emotions randomly overrun me and cause me to eat when I don't really want to eat, I'm continuing the insult that began in my childhood. Emotional eating is calling us to reparent self, to track your emotional experience, to stay present to yourself, and to discover other ways to regulate your emotions, ways other than food. So only one remedy for bad parenting is to be a better parent to yourself. Set them free. You can forgive your parents. You can let them off the hook. Did the best they could, given the upbringing and the education they had. Most of us don't even know what our parents went through when they were young. There's a pretty good chance that they might have had it far harder than we think we did. So on that note, emotional eating is oftentimes asking us to learn some version of forgiveness. And that doesn't just mean forgiving other people. It's because it's easy to hold ourselves as guilty. It's easy to hold ourselves as a criminal for not being able to control myself with food. So what do you do when you're guilty and you can't control yourself with food? You sentence yourself for the crime of emotional eating by self-attacking, self-rejecting, isolating, even eating more food or eating less food. We don't take care of ourselves. All kinds of punishments. So the good news is that emotional eating is not a crime. It's perfectly legal. It's understandable. As you've seen, according to science and psychology, it's forgivable. So you got to exonerate yourself. Forgive yourself for being an imperfect human being. Forgive yourself for being a person who's learning and growing. Forgive yourself for not having what you think is the perfect body or the perfect weight or the perfect whatever. Forgiveness is a virtue. It's a higher human quality. It's often a lesson that we're asked to learn throughout the course of our life, forgiving self and others. The more you hold yourself or another in judgment, the more emotional pain will be in, which will cause me to want to turn to food if I'm in emotional pain to relieve the discomfort of self-judgment or holding others in constant judgment. Can you see how that can be a vicious cycle? Self-judging or judging of others is a rather uncomfortable emotion. And at some point, you're going to have to soothe it. And if you're already prone to emotional eating, that's what you're going to do. You know, one of the reasons we don't forgive ourselves for emotional eating is because indeed we hold ourselves to an impossible standard of perfection. So emotional eating, in part, is here to teach many of us that we need to let go of perfect. We're definitely emotional eaters. We're not perfect eaters. I don't think I've ever met a perfect eater. And I don't know that one exists. I don't even know what that is. There's no reality on planet Earth where perfect humans exist who have perfect bodies that eat perfectly, that act perfectly, and look perfectly, and everything in life is so wonderful for them because they're so perfect. I just don't think that's a reality. And we get caught up in that belief. Perfectionism is a toxic viral belief. It's circulating in the atmosphere. You pick it up. It harms the human soul. It destroys happiness. I'm being intense here because this is kind of true, I think. It robs people of their lives. It's a dead-end street. If you've caught the toxic virus called perfectionism from the world, then it's your task to notice that and to do your best to stop indulging in it. First and foremost, the cure for perfectionism is awareness. Meaning, the cure for perfectionism is to wake up, see the truth of life, and embrace your beautiful imperfection. Nothing else is going to do. Emotional eating is a great teacher, and letting go of the belief that you should be perfect is one of the greatest lessons it can teach you. Because there is no perfection. Now, many people who emotionally eat comment that they often do so when they're bored. Yeah, I emotionally eat out of boredom. And for this reason, emotional eating is often teaching us to learn how to transcend boredom. Boredom is a sign that we're being lazy with our life. I don't know how else to say it. It's a sign that we're not valuing our own existence. You came here to be alive. You came here to have experiences. You came here to learn, to grow, to explore, to discover, to feel pleasured, nourished, to give your gifts, to serve others, to love, to feel, to inspire, to be inspired, so much more. The moment you feel boredom is the exact moment that you are being alerted by your own soul that it's time to make your life in that moment more interesting. So boredom shouldn't last more than 5 minutes. Own your life. It is always, 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 always your job to make your life more interesting if you're bored. Many people who emotionally eat don't even realize that they're bored. Or they know that they're bored, but they just don't take any actions to give their life the value that it deserves. We often don't come to grips with the fact that we're not really living a life that's interesting us. And this happens because we get stuck in a rut sometimes. I might not like my job. I might not like my friendships. I might not have any hobbies or interests or passions. I might not be curious about making my life worth talking about. So it's easy to get stuck in a rut, to feel a background feeling of boredom and dissatisfaction. And then what do? You turn to food to create an interesting experience. Hey, this tastes good. Hey, this feels like something to do. Food is something to do. So emotional eating is often asking us, make your life more interesting. Make your life more interesting than food. You know, one client I work with, she was in her late 40s. She complained of an unstoppable urge to eat chocolate. She was eating it every day, several times a day. It would make her feel good for a couple of minutes, and then she'd have a come down from the sugar rush. She'd feel guilty for eating too much chocolate. And what'd she do then? She'd self-attack. She'd self-reject. She'd isolate, feel bad about herself. And this is a person who's smart and she's motivated around her emotional eating. And she tried everything. She'd seen nutritionists, dietitians. She saw a hypnotherapist, a psychotherapist. Nothing was working for her. Her chocolate emotional eating experience really just grew worse and worse over the years for her. So, of course, like a lot of people, she thought she had a willpower problem. She believed that something was broken and she continued to feel more just depressed about it all. So, here's what I discovered when I work with her. Remember, emotional eating always has a brilliant reason rooted somewhere in biology or psychology or both. Now, it turns out that my client's life, I discovered, was completely uninteresting to her. She had virtually no friends. She had some interest in hobbies, but she wasn't pursuing them. She wanted to be in a relationship, but she hadn't dated in almost 9 years because she felt she needed to lose 20 pounds. I've heard that story too many times. She didn't like her job, and she felt very disconnected from her family, even though she loved her family. Now, as I listened to her talk about her life, I realized something very, very concerning. Chocolate was actually the most interesting thing in her life. When she talked about chocolate, her face lit up. Chocolate was her most pleasurable life experience by far. And chocolate's very pleasurable. It was impossible for her, and I mean this, it was impossible for her to let go of emotionally eating chocolate because it would have taken away her only love and her only pleasure. How could you do that to somebody? She couldn't do it to herself. What am I going to do? Kidnap her and tie her up and like, you can't eat chocolate. She couldn't do it herself because she was compelled to eat it. No amount of therapy and counseling and behavioral techniques could cure her emotional eating because emotional eating was trying to teach her something crucial, that she needed to create a life worth living. Find a better job, make friends, date, go on adventures, make your life interesting, make your life worth living. In other words, your life has to be more interesting and more compelling than chocolate. That's your task. That's your challenge. We actually worked together for about 8 months and we focused on everything but chocolate. I refused almost to talk about it very much. I asked her to stop fighting her urge for it and to actually plan on eating it every day. That's what we did. Plan on eating chocolate every day. Plan on eating it twice a day, just like you were doing. Only thing we're going to change is I want you to eat it and enjoy it. Stay present, stay awake, stay alert. Suck all the pleasure out of it. Slow down. Stop feeling so guilty. Enjoy the heck out of it because this is the most enjoyable thing for you. So celebrate it. And let's start to put first things first. Let's focus on all the other areas in life where you need to create a life that you think is worth living. Now, once she was able to embark on a journey of self-improvement, pursuing some of her long-held desires, particularly travel. She was really interested in travel. She wanted to learn dance. And once she finally started dating, her chocolate cravings finally downsized naturally. She still loved chocolate. But it wasn't this thing that was the biggest thing in her life anymore. So emotional eating was no longer her big problem because she was finally living her life. Yeah, did she still turn to chocolate when she wasn't feeling good about herself? Yes, but it wasn't overpowering. It wasn't the large sign over her head, you're an emotional eater and your problem is chocolate. Because she was now focused on first things first, your life. Now, let's state this in another way. Emotional eating is a great teacher and it's often asking us, to find meaning. What do you want to really live for? How do you value your precious time on earth? How do you invent a life that has purpose to it? If you don't have meaning or purpose in your life, heck, it's predictable that you'll turn to something that's a symbolic substitute. Food, sugar, drugs, alcohol, shopping, gambling, internet addiction, porn, fantasy. There's so many things to distract us. So many substitutes for living a real life. And we get caught in that. And then we think that thing is the problem. So from this perspective, emotional eating is often here to wake us up to the fact that we aren't living our best life. And we aren't making all the effort that we need to do so. So if food is the best thing that you have going in your life, or the only thing that gives you goodness, then your job is to change that starting now. And it's not going to happen overnight. But your job is to change that starting now. Your life is too precious. You are here in this world for a reason. You got to believe that. You're here in this world to find meaning and to live a meaningful life, to live the best life that you can, to be the best you that you can, to find out what are my gifts, what do I want to contribute. It doesn't have to be some grand thing. It could be very simple. Without meaning, without purpose in life, it's easy to turn to food. So once again, in that instance, food is not your problem. It's actually the solution. We're turning to food as a solution. My life isn't that interesting to me. I don't have meaning. I don't have purpose. I don't know what to do. But I do want to feel good, so I'm going to eat. Because food is readily available to most human beings. And you feel bad, and then you eat food, and then you feel better. So it makes perfect sense that we would do that. But food is not the problem. You know, in a similar vein, emotional eating is teaching a lot of us, it's asking many of us to create more of a spiritual connection in life. I find a lot of people feel that life, a lot of people these days feel that life is ultimately meaningless, that we're sort of somehow a bunch of random molecules slapped together by evolutionary accident, and our life is therefore somehow purposeless. We can feel alone in the universe, we can feel hopeless, we can feel cosmically kind of isolated. Now, what I've noticed is that without a belief in something higher or a greater wisdom, a higher power, God, whatever you want to call it, our feelings of meaninglessness or a lonely universe or a life that's not guided and precious, we find ourselves in so much background angst and pain that we need to medicate that pain and discomfort away. You've got to, because it's like we're living an existential crisis. We need medication from a universe that's meaningless and purposelessness. And what do we medicate with? One of the best medicines, food. So interestingly enough, emotional eating is often teaching us to grow spiritually or religiously. Or if you don't believe in, or if you're an atheist, then to find a moral code to live by, to find values that guide your life. Principles that guide your life. Otherwise, you're going to think it's all meaningless. And if it's meaningless, then why would you want to control your eating? But it's meaningless anyway. Just eat whatever you want. So ask yourself, is emotional eating teaching me to grow spiritually, religiously? Is it asking me to explore my beliefs about a higher power, to find deeper meaning, to feel a connection to something greater and more wise than myself? By the way, as I'm going through this list of, you know, some of the many ways that emotional eating can be a great teacher, please know that emotional eating may be asking us to learn many different lessons, or it may be asking us to learn certain key lessons at certain times in our life. It's your job to get curious about your own unique journey. You can do this on your own. You can do this working together in this way. You can do this as you set out to do this, and you'll attract what you need to deepen your own journey and discover what it is that you need to learn. It's your job to get curious about your own unique journey and to listen to how the angel called emotional eating may be whispering a very valuable lesson in your ear. You know, on a very personal level, for many people, emotional eating is asking us to create more intimacy in our life. Meaning, to call in or to be open to a significant relationship in our life, or to deepen relationships with the people or the person that we're already close with. Friends, family, children, parents, coworkers, girlfriends, boyfriends, husband, wife, etc. Intimacy. Intimacy means a certain kind of closeness, a deeper connection, a more soulful way of relating. Intimacy means connections with people that are meaningful, that are penetrating, that are emotional, that are thoughtful, and that touch us in a more profound way. You know, so often when our relationships lack intimacy, we feel that lack. We feel something that's missing. There's a certain sweetness that's absent in our relationships. In a way, our relationships may not truly be feeding us. Relationships feed us. So when they're not feeding us, where do we turn to get sweetness or nourishment or that feeling of instant satisfaction? We turn to food. Food is once again the ideal. It's actually the ideal symbolic substitute for something that somehow feels deeper and more profound that we need in our life. Now, oddly enough, we'll often tell ourselves that, well, I can't be intimate or close to another person because I emotionally eat, or because I'm not perfect, or because I need to lose weight in order to be loved. The pain of such a lack of love and connection will often lead us back to food. And the cycle continues. So if you believe that you can't have intimacy or love because you need to lose weight, then strangely enough, you're committing a form of weight hate against yourself. You're telling yourself and the world that anyone who weighs what you weigh is unworthy of love. That's what you're saying to yourself. Look around you and you will find that people of all sizes and shapes have love in their life. You'll see that in every state and in every country on planet Earth. So if those are your beliefs, you have to stop being so shallow. You have to stop thinking that others are thinking shallow thoughts about you. If someone truly doesn't like you because of what you weigh, great news. Cross them off your list. They don't deserve to be in your life. Why would you waste a moment with such a person? You wouldn't want to be with such a shallow person who says, I'm only going to love you if you lose weight. If you wouldn't want to be with that person, then don't be that person yourself. You're insulting yourself and the life you've been given if you withhold your love from the world because you believe you can only be loved if you hit your target weight. That's just a bad excuse to avoid love, to avoid intimacy, to avoid connection, to avoid relationship. Don't use that excuse because it doesn't serve you. It hasn't served you. You know, on an even more personal level, many of us turn to emotional eating when we don't have enough touch, enough physical intimacy, enough sexual pleasure in our life. You know, most humans are designed and meant to touch and be touched. We have sexual needs and desires. Our body might long to be loved on and be pleasured by another human being. We can literally hunger for sexual intimacy, for physical contact. And guess what? When our hunger for sexuality, for physical touch, for that exploration of physical sensual intimacy with another, when that's not being satisfied, we can naturally and instinctively look for the best symbolic substitute, which, once again, for many people, it's food. It's readily available. It's there. Food is intimate. Food has all kinds of sensations to it. Food gives you a close, somewhat close approximation to an experience of deep intimacy. It makes perfect sense, by the way, that a human being would reach for food when we're feeling deprived of touch, love, sexuality, sensuality, intimacy. I see this with both women and men. We're born to experience sensation, pleasure, and physical contact. And we don't always have the pleasure of having such pleasures in our life. So first and foremost, it's helpful to notice if emotional eating is acting as a substitute for physical, sensual, sexual intimacy in your life. And it's even more helpful to begin to fully own your desires, to not judge them, to start to welcome them. If you can't readily get the physical contact you crave from a partner, then it's often helpful to create physical contact in other ways, just to get the juices flowing, get a massage, do some regular self-massage, do more physical care with yourself, take up yoga or dance or Pilates or any kind of movement where you can at least start to self-rejoice in and feel your own body. Find ways to communicate to your body that you love it. Ask your friends for hugs. And if you're single and have been that way for too long, be open to a relationship, be open to intimacy, start dating, find an intimacy coach, find a dating coach, get whatever support you need to own that part of your life. It's so important. It's so important if you need to notice the lesson that emotional eating is asking me to welcome sensuality and sexuality into my life. For a lot of us, emotional eating is pointing, and I've mentioned this in one of the case stories, emotional eating is pointing to our need to find our voice. Finding your voice can mean learning to say what you're really thinking. Speak the truth more. Be more real with people. Say what you think and feel. Have more meaningful conversations. Stop holding back your voice. Don't be shallow. Stop hiding. Stop playing small. Stop thinking that your voice doesn't matter. Stop believing that nobody wants to hear what you have to say. Really, there's a fascinating connection between food and self-expression because both involve the mouth. When we're holding back our true voice, our words, we often symbolically reinforce that holding back by stuffing things down with food. Because if you're eating, you're not speaking. Or you're talking with food in your mouth, but you know what I'm saying. If you're eating, if you're emotionally eating, you're not speaking. So emotional eating is teaching many of us to up our game when it comes to self-expression, when it comes to finding our voice. What do you want to say? What do you want to communicate? Where have you been holding back from expressing love? Where have you been holding back from expressing beautiful truths to people in your life? So open up, speak your truth, find your voice. Ask yourself, is there anyone I'm holding back from? What is it in life that I want to say to family, friends, loved ones, coworkers? What do you want to say to the world? Where are the places where I'm not being the real me? How do I need to come out of the closet to show up in a real and authentic way? The more you hold back the truth of who you are, the more discomfort you're going to feel. And the more discomfort you feel, the more you'll need to medicate that discomfort. And the more you need to medicate your discomfort, the more you're going to look to food, chances are, if your challenge is emotional eating. So, for many of us, the key to transforming emotional eating is to find our voice, is to self-express. You know, sometimes emotional eating is asking us to have better boundaries with people. Having good boundaries is a form of truthful self-expression, meaning don't say yes to people when you really mean no, and to not say no when you really want to say yes. When we sell out in relationships and agree to do things or say things that are against our own deepest wishes or instincts, once again, we're going to be in discomfort. And such discomfort is often best medicated by food, emotional eating. So once again, we're not trying to fight emotional eating. We're listening to it. We're learning from it. It's a great teacher. Emotional eating could be teaching us that we need to work on specific relationships in our life. Perhaps it's a relationship with a parent, a sibling, a friend, a significant other, a coworker. Again, emotional eating might be asking us to learn to be more real in certain relationships, more honest, more present. Sometimes in relationships, we just simply need to take more risks. When we have relationship challenges, which are a predictable part of life, and we aren't being fully present to that relationship challenge, or not being honest, or not being mature, or not being effective and skillful with that particular relationship challenge, once again, relationship challenge will cause us pain. And how do we deal with pain in a relationship that we don't know how to deal with effectively in the relationship? We might choose to wash that pain down with food. So it makes perfect sense that we would turn to food in such circumstances because it's an easy fix. It's a quick fix. And it makes far more sense to listen to what emotional eating is trying to teach us in this instance, which is to rise up and do our best to get the kind of support that we need to work through relationship conflicts, to work through relationship difficulties, and to work through whatever it is that our relationships are trying to teach us. How are they asking us to grow? You know, another way of saying all of what I've just said is that emotional eating is always pointing somewhere else. It's pointing somewhere else other than food. Meaning emotional eating is not some problem you have with food. Emotional eating is your solution, remember, to stress, to pain, to upset, to confusion, to uncertainty, to disappointment, to any unwanted or uncomfortable emotion or life experience. These unwanted emotions exist because we're human, and as humans, we experience a full range of emotions in this lifetime. So none of that's bad. And there are places in life where we need to learn and grow. So your job is to stop looking for the answers to emotional eating in all the wrong places. Stop thinking that you have an issue with food, with willpower. Nope. Your relationship with food is here to teach you. Emotional eating is a great teacher, and it's asking you to look to all the different domains of your life to see, where is emotional eating asking me to grow? How is it teaching me? How is it asking me to be a better human being, a better person? Yet another way of saying all this is that unwanted symptoms, unwanted habits, like emotional eating, they are the wisdom of life speaking to you. Unwanted symptoms speak oftentimes in a metaphoric and symbolic language. You know, think for a moment about the unwanted symptom called a headache. Now, there could be 1,000 different reasons why you have a headache. A headache could be purely related to stress. You might have a headache from too much alcohol, too much caffeine. You might have a headache from being too hungry. You might have food poisoning. You might have exposure to a toxic or noxious chemical. Your headache might be caused by mold. It might be caused by a lack of sleep. You could have a brain tumor. It could be caused by a prescription drug. You could have a headache because you're on a good fast and you're detoxing. You might have a concussion. You might be suffering from a lack of water. The list goes on and on. The headache is there to get our attention. It's nature's way of talking to us and saying, yo, headache, hurt. What's that about? Probe deeper. Why is my head hurting me? Let me go through all the basic possibilities and see. So it's a conversation you're having with your symptom, with your unwanted symptom, with your unwanted behavior. You're probing. You're being curious. You're saying, what's this asking of me? What is it asking me to course correct in my life? What's it asking me to learn in my life? How is it asking me to respond? So here's a journaling assignment for this session. Here's your practice. Ask yourself, how is emotional eating a great teacher for me? What's it asking me to learn? How's it asking me to grow as a person? Feel free to look through the notes for this session, as you'll see listed all the examples I've previously spoken about. Be thorough and thoughtful in your answers. This is a powerful question. It's a powerful question that you're asking yourself. Powerful questions, they deserve a lot of spaciousness. They deserve a lot of attention. The answers are likely ever-changing as you ask this question over the course of days, weeks, months, or your lifetime. Doing this exercise invites you to take responsibility for your life in a beautiful way. It's time for you to let go of feeling powerless around food. All the practices we're doing and we're talking about are empowering. Asking a powerful question is empowering. So you may no longer use the excuse, food has power over me. I feel powerless over food. Okay, we're changing that. We're taking back the power. One way we're doing that is by asking a powerful question. How is emotional eating a great teacher for me? That's a powerful question. Doing this exercise invites you to take responsibility in a whole new way. When we're trapped in the unwanted habit of emotional eating, it feels like food has power. It seems like it. But it does not. Food is just a bunch of chemicals and proteins and fats and carbohydrate and fiber and water, whatever it is. So to reclaim your power with food, you first reclaim the power in your life. And you do that by embracing your journey, taking responsibility for your journey, meaning embrace the ability for you to respond to your life circumstances so you're not helpless. You're no longer stuck. You're not going to have this challenge forever. I have personally met hundreds and hundreds of people who have let go of unwanted emotional eating and reclaimed their lives. And each one of them embarked upon a journey of personal growth. Emotional eating is here to help you mature into your best self. That's the good news. Now, I wouldn't say this to a client, but if a client steps into my office and they're feeling depressed and morose and upset because they've gone through years of emotional eating, inside myself, I'm feeling positive for them. I'm feeling happy for them because I know from experience that emotional eating is a great teacher. And we just have to get the conversation on the right track, that there's going to be goodness that's going to come out of what has seemed for a long time like a challenge. Emotional eating is here to help you mature into your best self. But to fulfill your greatest expression in this life you've been given, you must consciously choose to be an active participant in your own evolution. It's about making the conscious choice to grow into your best self. When you make the conscious choice to grow into your best self, your unwanted habits will slowly die. They will die a slow, lovely death. Again, think of it this way. Emotional eating or any unwanted habit exists to get your attention. It's letting you know that something's up in your life. Something just wants to be addressed. It wants to be embraced, looked at. That's what a symptom does. That's its function. It's here to get our attention so we can slow down, get curious, and find out, how is this teaching me? How is this speaking to me? How is this whispering some important lesson in my ear that I need to learn? Now, here's your second and final exercise and practice for this session. As you notice from the first exercise I just mentioned about what emotional eating is trying to teach you, make a list of those life lessons and journal the practical things you can do to actively learn those life lessons. How can you best learn what you're being asked to learn? In other words, what are the practices you can do each day to help you learn what emotional eating is here to teach you? So I'm asking you to invent that. I'm asking you to be creative around you. You know you better than anybody. Trust your own journey. Trust your instincts. Trust your intuition. Spend time. Ask the powerful question. How is emotional eating a great teacher for me? List all the things. And then journal the practical ways you can help yourself actively learn those lessons. For example, if you notice that emotional eating is a great teacher for you, is being a great teacher for you by asking you to learn to let go of being perfect, we spoke about that, then ask yourself, how do I let go of perfectionist thinking? What practical things can I do each day? Now, the main answer to that, by the way, is to, as we've said, notice your mind. Monitor your thinking. Stay alert. Be aware. Oh, I have this viral belief. Let me be vigilant and catch my mind when I go into an internal conversation around being perfect. Shorten the amount of time that you indulge in the thought, I must be perfect. Or you can create affirmations for yourself that help release you from perfectionism, meaning say to yourself, I'm beautifully imperfect human being and I embrace my imperfect humanity, something like that. Another example, if emotional eating seems to be teaching you to find your voice more and to be more authentic in your communication, then perhaps it means you start practicing being more upfront and real and honest with your closest friends and loved ones first. Practice on the easy people. In other words, start with some of the people that feel safest to you to be real and honest and to express yourself and who you truly are and what you have to say and what your thoughts and your feelings and beliefs are. So you are inventing practical ways to help yourself. It's all about being an active student of your own journey. This is about you creating practices that help you transform your life. And by transforming your life, once again, you are slowly and beautifully starving the only thing you want to be starving, which is an unwanted, unnecessary habit of emotional eating. You're making emotional eating obsolete, not by addressing food and eating and actually trying to actually starve your actual body or trying to actually control your actual appetite. You're letting go of emotional eating by creating your best life, by making emotional eating unnecessary and obsolete. What a beautiful way to go about the business of transforming yourself, living your best life. So we're no longer attacking the problem where it is not. Emotional eating is a great teacher. Start to respect it. Sometimes great teachers, they can be a little intense. We don't like what we have to learn all the time. I don't. And sometimes takes time to get on board. It's like, okay, here's what life is teaching me. Here's what life is asking me to learn. Here's how life is calling me. Here's how a higher wisdom, a higher power is calling me. Here's how the wisdom of life is asking me to grow. So you're not just solving this with your own small brain. You're appealing to a greater creative power, assuming that such a thing exists. And I believe it does. So we've covered a lot of ground today. I appreciate you putting in the time and the energy and the effort, as always, to your own benefit, your own betterment, your own healing, your own transformation. And please continue to stay with yourself. Be your own best friend. Be patient with yourself. Be kind to yourself on this journey. Celebrate the small successes. Do the practices. Share about what you're learning with other people. You know, make it a conversation. Create support for yourself in any way you can. That's one great way to help transform emotional eating. Create support. This program, this is a way for you to create support. That might be enough for you. And what's always beneficial is you remembering that you're embracing your own journey here in the widest sense. You're seeing things through a bigger picture, through fresh eyes, and that's where innovation is going to happen for you. That's where newness is going to happen. Because if the old strategies haven't worked for you, then great, we're trying new ones. And I promise you, you apply yourself to what we're learning and you're going to see some real good improvements. You're going to see some real mini breakthroughs and perhaps some big breakthroughs along the way. So my friends, this concludes session number 4 of the Emotional Eating Breakthrough. So many good things to consider. I shall see you in the next session. Thank you.